Never get chill. It's a good day.
Okay, Yalla. So we're starting. In the Gemara in Megillah, in Daf Lamed Aleph. Hitkin. Hitkin Ezra Hasofer Shiur Koran Beklalos Shebetoras Kohanim Lifnei Ha'atzeres VeShebeMishnah Torah Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Ezra was metakein that the Jewish people should read the curses in Sefer Vayikra before Shavuos, and the curses in Mishnah Torah and Sefer Devarim before Rosh Hashanah. My time. What is this? What is the reason for this takana? Kidei shetichla hashana v'kilaloseha, so that the year should go out with its curses. So, one possible way of understanding this takana is to say that, you know, we're reading the parshios in the year, and we come and we're going to get to the klalos in Mishnah Torah and the klalos in Sefer Vayikra at some point. So we have to arrange the Kriyas HaTorah in such a way that we're going to get to these parshios in this week, the weeks prior to these dates. So we arrange that some week before Shavuos we get to Parshas Bechukosai, and some week before Rosh Hashanah we get to Parshas Kisavo. However, this is the wrong understanding of this takana. This would be the wrong understanding of this takana. Why is that? Because as that very Gemara says later on in a slightly different context, that the custom that we have of completing the Torah once every year is a relatively new custom from the time of the Rishonim. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tefillah that this is a Minhag Kol Yisrael that developed much later on. It's not exactly clear when it occurred, but the Gemara says, Hani B'nei Ma'arava, these people of the West, meaning the people in Eretz Yisrael, Masaimi La'araisa Chadlis L'tlas Shnin. They would finish the Torah once every 3 years, which it was a triennial cycle. So there was no, we're finishing the Torah anyway, so let's make sure that this week that we read this Parsha falls out over here. Rather, the proper understanding of this Takana is akin to the Takana of the Dalet Parshios. Just like we have a Mitzvah Chachamim to read certain Parshios before certain weeks, before Purim and before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, for example. So there is a Takana regardless of where you happen to be in the cycle of the Parshios, whether you're doing the annual cycle or the triennial cycle, to stop whatever you're doing and to read these sections, to read these sections of the Torah. And a person could ask, what is the reason why it's so important to read the Klalos at these junctures? The Gemara explains why Shavuos is also akin to a Rosh Hashanah, which is not exactly the topic of our conversation, why Shavuos is also a Rosh Hashanah. But before the Rosh Hashanah, before the heads of the years, the beginnings of the years, it's important to read the Klalos. Why is it important to read the Klalos? So we have to first understand what it means that there are Klalos, Bechlal, attached to the Torah. What does that mean that there are curses that are attached to the Torah? Now, it's going to be a little bit more heavy this time, and I was thinking about the topic to discuss now, and Chazal and the Rishonim warn us about biting off more than we can chew when it comes to delving into topics of Machshava. In fact, there's a whole chapter in Maseches Chagiga that discusses this, and how there are even laws governing these topics. But today, there's no real choice but to go deep, because the alternative is also a choice. To not delve in is also a choice. And today, the only option is to go. The only way out is through, as I think we said last week. So, Bezrat Hashem, we'll try to do the best we can. In the Bavli in Rosh Hashanah, we learn the following. And on Rosh Hashanah, Shlosha Sfarim Niftachim, that there are three books that are opened up. Sifron Shel Tzadikim Gemurin, Sifron Shel Rishayim, and Sifron Shel Beinonim. And as we know, those who are good enough to get to make the first pick, so to speak, to borrow some sports language, they get into Sifrei Chaim immediately. And those that are really, really, really bad, that are good, they're so bad that they're just rejected offhand, they are immediately put into Sifron Shel Mason. And the Beinonim, so they are kind of in this limbo state, and they, you know, we figure out what to do with them during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Why does God need three books to sort people out? Why doesn't it just say that on Rosh Hashanah, or during this period of time, people are it's decided whether these people are going to be, whether these people are going to receive a punishment or a reward, or they're going to be held in limbo? What is this idea that there is, that God has a sefer, or multiple svarim? There's multiple svarim that are going on, okay? That are opened up during this period of time, and people are written inside the svarim. I want to read you a pasuk, a Rashi rather, from Sefer Shmuel. Apologize that I'm reading it from my phone, but this was a last minute that I remembered. The holiday of Rosh Hashanah, as it's known in the Torah, is not called Rosh Hashanah, but is called Yom HaZikaron. And Chazal teach us that there is this very, very powerful theme of judgment that goes on Rosh Hashanah. As we just read, there are these three books, and it's decided which book you're going to be in, and it's very serious. It's a very, very serious thing that's going on. And this is called this day is called in the Torah Yom HaZikaron. Yom HaZikaron. What is going on the Yom HaZikaron? Who is remembering, and what is being remembered? So, in this pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, it's listing as David HaMelech comes into power and he's setting up his government. First, he was the king in Hebron for a few years, and then he eventually became the king of the whole Jewish people afterwards. And it describes how he sets up his government. The Yoav ben Tsruya al Hatzava. So he appoints Yoav ben Tsruya, as we know, he's his minister of defense, his Ramatkal, or whatever you want to call him. The Yehoshaphat ben Achilud Mazkir. Yehoshaphat, this guy named Yehoshaphat, was the Mazkir. What is a Mazkir? What's his job? Says Rashi, the Mazkir. Mazkir Ezed Din Ba Lefanav Rishon Leposko Rishon. The Mazkir's job is to bring the dinim in front of the melech. That is the job of the Mazkir. So when we talk about a Yom HaZikaron that God has, this day of Zikaron, it is inextricably bound with this idea of judgment, of determining what is going to come before the melech. As the Mishnah says, Kol olam ovrim lefanav kibnei maron. Each individual bria is brought before God like this one lane traffic lane in this place called Maron, which was so narrow that each individual, they had to go single file. Each individual sheep or animal that was passing through had to be passed over individually. So basically, what we're saying is that the very nature of the din that's occurring on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom HaZikaron, is that there is a remembering before the king, i.e. God, that there's something taking place with determining which book you're associated with, which sefer you're associated with. And so you can give me this. We're going to read now from a sefer called Sefer Yetzirah. Now, Sefer Yetzirah is a very, very old sefer from the time of Chazal. The Gemara say that the Gemara says that the seminal, seminal text, but certainly the seminal information from which Sefer Yetzirah was written, almost certainly compiled by Rabbi Akiva and his base Hamedrash. But the seminal information of Sefer Yetzirah it originates already from Avram Avinu. And all of Rabbeinu Arishonim, not all, but many, certainly quote this book. It's mentioned in the Gemara already. In the Gemara on Shabbos, it mentions this book. And many, many of Rabbeinu Arishonim wrote commentaries on this book, all the way going back to Sad Yagon. Sad Yagon wrote a perush on Sefer Yetzirah. Okay? Now, we're reading from the first mission of Sefer Yetzirah. It's the structure of it is Prakim and Mishnayos. That's the classic structure of Sefer Yetzirah. Okay, so again, just Lefi Arkeinu, but to pay attention, because each word is its whole topic. I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying each word in this Mishnah. There are books that are written on each word in the Mishnah. I'm just to understand. We're gonna try to what's relevant for us. So it says the Mishnah: Bishloshim u'shtaim nesivos plios chachma chachak Hashem tzvakos Elohei Yisrael Elohim Chaim. God carved the world into being through 32 pathways of wisdom. 32 pathways of wisdom. Okay? The Mishnah goes on to explain that the 32 pathways are made up of the what is called Eser Sfiros Blima, the 10 supernal attributes that are hanging, that are suspended in nothingness. Eser Sfiros Blima, which is a term that appears in the Medrash Rabbah and Parshas Naso as well. Eser Sfiros Blima, and the 22 letters of the alphabet. Right, the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis and these Eser Sfiros Blima make up the 32 Nesivos Chachma, the 32 pathways of wisdom. Okay? Ubara es Olamo, and through these he generated the world into being, Bishlosha Safarim, with three Safarim. What are the three Safarim? Sofer, Sefer, the Sipur. The author, the book, and the story. These are the three Sofer, the author, Sefer, the book, and Sipur, the story. These are the three modalities in which the world exists. The world exists in these three three modalities. The modality of the author, the modality of the book, and the modality of the story. Now, I'm going to read now from one of the classic Perushim on Sefer Yetzirah, which was written by one of the Chachmei HaNistar from the late 1300s, of Yosef Ibn Shalom, or Yosef HaAroch, as he's often referred to. Yosef HaAroch was almost certainly one of the Chabura that participated in compiling the work known as the Zoharic literature, the Raya Mehemna and the Medrash HaNe'elam, and all the different works that make up the Zohar. Rav Yosef HaAroch was a Talmud of Yoshua ibn Shoib, Shin Vav Ayin Yud Beis Shoib, and Yoshua ibn Shoib was a Talmud of the Rashba. That's the Masorah of this commentary. Classically, by the way, just so you all should know that when this commentary appears, it's called the Perush HaRaivit, I'll say for Yetzirah, but it is not the Perush of the Raivit. In fact, it says in the Kisvei HaRizal that Rav Chaim Vital told Rav Chaim Vital that the Raivit that is said to have authored this Perush is not the Raivit of the Hasagos, like the Hasagos of the Rambam. And somehow his name became associated with this, but it is not the Ravid. And the Chida writes in Shema Gedolim that it is known that this is the author, Yosef HaAroch, and which has also been confirmed academically that this is the source of this. Anyway, so that's Yosef HaAroch, one of the Gedolei Arishon. So says this is actually a rather long section as you can imagine for something like this. Okay. The Hine, Hizkir b'Mishnah Zu Shlosha Minim. It writes in this Mishnah three different types or three modalities. Nesivos v'shemos u'svarim shehem sefer v'sefer v'sipor. V'hine, Lamed Beis Nesivos Elu. These 32 pathways. Hem ke'ein ha'nimin shel ha'klei nigun. They are like the strings of a musical instrument. Sha'aruach min ha'sheves beinehem, that the spirit flows between them, or the wind, literally the wind, flows between them. V'yoseis mimena ha'musika. Musika. He writes musika with a samach. Not how we spell it in modern Hebrew, with a zayin. Okay, so what is it saying? It's saying that there are these forces, there are these structures that are built into the world, and then when the ruach moves through them, it produces a melody, and the melody that's produced is our experience of the world. Okay, Now he continues. He continues over here talking specifically about the. Specifically about the idea of the here. Ve'od nuchal nilmod miloshon mi saper she'asam slugim kesapir. V'havein, and understand the nature of this sefer that it is that is being discussed. Kamosha Kosov, Besefer Bereshis, like it says in one of the Sukkim in Parshas Bereshis, Ze Sefer Toldos Adam. This is the book of Toldos Adam. V'ne'emar, and Moshe Rabbeinu also says in Sefer Shemos, Mecheni na mi sifracha asher kosavta. Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, if you don't forgive the Jewish people, then you should erase me from your book. V'ne'emar, Yimachu mi sefer chayim. David HaMelech prays that these wicked people that are harassing him should be erased from the book of life. The Ne'emar, and it says in Sefer Malachi, Vayishma, that God will hear, Vayikasev Sefer Zikaron Lefanav, and he will write a book of remembrance before him, Li'arei Hashem L'choshvei Shemo, those who fear him and those who remember his name. The Amar Ki Ashachakim V'chol Prateim Nichtevu V'nechkehu V'chochma, that these modalities of the Sofer, Sefer, and Sipur is the same modality as the supernal wisdom that was the first Nesivos that were mentioned in the Mishnah. It's okay, we're going to explain all of this momentarily. Just stick with it for the time being. The Nivlei Shamayim Milosho Nevel V'Kinor Osam HaMagino Shel HaMusika, that's what I quoted a second ago, Tame HaTorah Mi Esadram, are the secret reasons behind the mitzvahs of the Torah that have been established within it. So we'll step back and explain everything that was just said. Bezrat Hashem, to the extent that we can. When we have any story before us of Sofer, Sefer, and Sipur, what is the relationship between the author, the book, and the story? What is the relationship between these things? So the author contains within him already the whole book, and the whole story is already contained within the consciousness of the author. It's already contained within him. And then the author writes the book, and the book is there. And most books that we have, all they are is just information. That's all it is. It's just information. But there's a third stage over here, which is the sipur, the story. What's the difference between a story and a book? What's the fundamental difference between a story and a book? The fundamental difference is that a story is something that's acted out, and a book is just a theoretical thing. It's not talking about something that actually happened. A book is a story. It's an abstract thing. But a story is something that's acted out. A story is something that's acted out. When it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world with the modalities of the author, the book, and the story, what that means is that through these tools of the 32 pathways of wisdom, which again are all of the which the Peiros HaRavid alludes to, is all right, the practice of Torah, the Tamei HaTorah, that we go through the world acting out the mitzvahs, acting out Avodas Hashem, acting out ways to improve ourselves and to improve our surroundings, and doing all the things it is that we do. We are acting out the model of the author, the book, and the story. Meaning, Perush, we are becoming authors of a story that is then played out. The book is not an abstract book. It's not a book that stays on the bookshelf. It's a book that is that whatever is written in that book actually happens in the world. That's what it means that there's an author, a book, and a story. In the regular world, you have an author that writes a book, and the book stays on the bookshelf, and that's it. But what this is saying is that no, this is a unique type of book. This is the type of book that the author decides what he's going to write. He writes it in the book, and then whatever's in the book happens in the world. The most accurate way to understand this model, Rabosai, is through the. Excuse me. Is that me? Indeed. Apologize. The most, I think, the best way to understand this model is to see this through the lens of data and computers, the digital world that we all experience now. When someone operating a computer writes a story and tells it to the computer acts out whatever that story is. We call those things programs. You write code, you write a story, and then you tell it to the computer, and the computer will act out whatever is in that story. It will do whatever you tell it. Whatever is in that story, it will be acted out, whether you want it or not. Right? This is the nature of it. It's interesting how the information in a computer is called zikaron. It's called memory. That's what it's called. You give zikaron to a computer, and the computer will act out whatever is in the zikaron. What's being said, Rabozai, is that the Yom HaZikaron is the day, and this is Beferish in the Gemara that we quoted from Rosh Hashanah, the three books that are opened up on Rosh Hashanah. The day of the Zikaron, the day of Rosh Hashanah, is the day that the book that is going to be acted out, the story that is going to be acted out for the rest of the year, is being written. The program is being written. And for the rest of the year, you're going to run the program. You're writing the program, you're sticking the USB into the hardware, and it's going to run with that program. Whatever is in that story will be acted out in the Sipur. It will be a Sipur. It will be acted out. Yeah.
This is like a mashal, or this is like a, like the servants here, is it, how should we take it, like literal, or just like a way that has the...
Well, when you say literal, what do you mean?
I'm not sure. what do we do with this information?
What do we do with this information?
Yeah, I think it's just what to think about, or is it...
This is the approach. This is so. As we're going to try to explain a little bit more, the awareness that a person has to have on Rosh Hashanah when they come to Yom HaDin, what is the consciousness that you have to come to Yom HaDin with? Okay, we're going to get there. The a din sometimes has the connotation of you're going before someone who's going to make a decision, and that decision is going to determine what's going to happen to you. But that's not the nature of this din. This din is very different. This din, it involves a mazkir that's writing a message to the king, and based on that message, that's going to determine the judgment. The judgment isn't the arbitrary decision of someone external to you. The judgment is something that you have very, very much have control over. That's what we're saying. It's that there is an author who is writing out the book which will be acted out. And there are three distinct types of books that can be written. There's three main types of books that can be written. There's the book of the Tzaddikim that can be written, there's the book of the Rishayim that can be written, and there's the book of the Beinonim that can be written. And on Rosh Hashanah, a person decides which book they want to be written in. And they're an active participant in writing this book. That's the
yeah. When you're saying that it's an active participant, you're an active participant, who else is participating in this writing of the book?
Who else other than you? No one.
You are the sole
determiner of what is being written in this book.
We're saying it's Schar Onesh, then is it like does Hashem pick what the Schar Onesh is, or it's just like a direct outcome of your action? Like, is everything, does he do like a calculation, or is it just?
So we're going into a slightly different topic. You want to hand me the Sefer HaChinuch over there and Mitzvah Kuf Ayin Vav.
Why say now?
I think it's best.
Yeah, but, yeah. So, what role does God play in it then?
If you're writing
your own story and you're writing your own, you know, how it's going to play out, what role does God play in it?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays a reciprocal role based on the decisions that you make, and this is the point that I'm trying to hammer home. It's in Parshas Metzora. Yeah. Oh, thank God. This is the mitzvah of someone who's tamei and saras to cover their head and to call out and to announce to everyone that they're tamei. Okay. So the Sefer HaChinuch says in the context of he says da be'inyan mida keneged mina shemuzkar bedivrei Chazal. There is an idea of judgment for judgment that is said in the right, that's mentioned in Chazal all the time. There's an idea that the punishment that befalls a person is measure for whatever he did. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, a very strong language. Da should be a sod ze tov ba rabin, that almost no one gets this idea right. Because they believe that this is some type of retribution or some type of punishment that comes from God Himself. This is not what it's saying. The person through his actions creates whatever judgment is going to befall him. The mida keneged mida means that whatever a person does, that's what he experiences. Right? As Nefesh HaChaim says, Hashem Tzilcha, God is your shadow. Like, what does that mean? Just like when you move, your shadow moves. So too, when you do something, God reacts in turn. Hashem Tzilcha, God is your shadow. So you move, your shadow will move. So too, if you move, then God will move. God will respond to whatever it is that you do.
A natural tosa that action we have, or in a
way that,
like... A natural tosa?
Yeah.
Like, if I do an action, is it always going to happen? Or it's like, does it only work like that?
Well, there's a myriad of factors that determine what a person is going to experience. I'm not claiming to know all of those factors. The people here are familiar with Hilchos Tshuva, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about... Where the Rambam brings the idea of Kel Deos. Is everyone familiar with this idea? Kel Deos of God of the Deos of the measurements. That only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to determine if someone, because he says if the majority of someone's actions are good, then he's written in Sifrin Shel Tzadikin. If the majority of someone's actions are bad, he's written in Sifrin Shel Rishayim. So how do we measure the majority? Like, what's the majority? Huh? No, that each individual should view himself as if he's teetering on the edge. But in terms of determining what the majority of actions are, so how do you make that calculation? If you did 10 mitzvos and 10 averos, so you're in the middle, and if you do 11 averos and 9 mitzvos, then you're a rasha? No, so the idea of Kel Deos Hashem is that only God is able to make the calculation of the quality of the averos versus the quality of the mitzvahs, how much a person was tested, how much a person, how easy it was for a person to fulfill the mitzvah that he did, how difficult it was. There's a myriad of calculations that go into determining whether the person is in Sifrin Shel Tzadikim or Sifrin Shel Rishayim. But the thing that we're talking about is not the calculation itself. These are things that is, perhaps that answers your question. What is the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this whole thing? I think that answers your question. Meaning only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that is determining the sum total of a person's actions and how they are going to be affecting him or his surroundings. But from the perspective of the person has to approach this avoda, and is from a certain perspective. And what is that perspective? That he is writing the program that will affect the outcome of whatever is occurring to him during the rest of the year, essentially. It is the Yom HaZikaron for the rest of the year. It is the day of Zikaron for the rest of the year. Yeah. Did I close this book? In Yishayahu Samech Beis, I closed it by accident. Yishayahu Samech Beis, the Navi says something very, very interesting. So there's a pasuk over here. Lo ya'amer lecha od azuvo la'artzech lo ya'amer od shmama. It will not be said upon you. This is, we're talking about the coming geula and the redemption of the Jewish people. That it will not be said about you that your land is forsaken and that you are desolate. Ki l'choi karei chefzi bo la'artzech be'ula ki chafetz Hashem bach va'artzech tiba'el, that you will be husbanded, that you will be, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rejoin with you, so to speak, and your land will not be desolate, and you will be permanently partnered with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Vav. Al chamosayich Yerushalayim hifkadeti shomrim. I, God, I have placed guardians on the walls of Yerushalayim. Kol hayom v'chol halayla tamid lo yechashu. The day and the night long, they are not silent. Hamazkirim es Hashem al damilachem. Those who remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not be silent. So who are the walls of what are the walls of Yerushalayim, and who are the people that are guarding it, and why do they need to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu about anything? What does that mean to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It can't be the same reminding that we talk about as human beings, that you forgot something and then you remember it. That's obviously not relevant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it mean to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of something? Hamazkir es Hashem. So I'm reading from Targum Uziel, which was written by, as we know, Yonasan ben Uziel, one of the disciples of Hillel HaZaken. So it says the Targum the following: Ha al ovade ahavasach tzadikaya karta di Yerushalayim. Those are the walls of Yerushalayim that the Navi is referring to. The tzadikim, they are the walls of Yerushalayim. The righteous people are the walls of Yerushalayim. Mitaknim notrin kadamai. They are guarding before me. Kol yamama v'chol leila, right? The whole day and the whole night. Tadira lo paskin misamar dachran tavavasach kadam Hashem. They do not stop bringing up all the great deeds of the Jewish people. Lo paskin lachone, and they never cease. That is what it means to be mazkir es Hashem, to bring up these deeds before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it means to remind God. What does it mean to remind God? I'll tell you, it's a great example, even on the pshat level. We see in the beginning of Megillas Esther that Achashverosh he decides to get rid of Vashti, and then in the very next perek it says that one day Achashverosh zachar es Vashti v'es asher asasav v'es asher nigzar aleha. He remembered Vashti and what she did and what was decreed upon her. What does that mean? He remembered, meaning he forgot. It was like 2 pages ago. Less than 2 pages ago, he forgot what Vashti did and the convening of the council and the whole tumult about what to do. And he's asking the Chachmei Yisrael, and then he has to ask the Chachmei Shushan. He forgot about that. It doesn't mean that he forgot. Mazkir means, this is what Mazkir means. Again, this is bringing it home to what we're saying. Exactly, the Mazkir means that whatever you are Mazkir, it means that you are going to act on the basis of this fact. That's what that means. Meaning whatever it is that in your awareness, that on the basis of that, that's how you're going to act. And this goes back to what we're saying about Yom HaZikaron, the nature of what it means to have a Yom HaZikaron, the day of remembering. Whatever the year is going to be, it's going to be based on these things. These are the things that I want the year to be based on. You're bringing up the essential facts that we want to be for the rest of the year.
People,
yes.
We basically remind God.
We are, when we say Hamazkir Mes Hashem, what does that mean? Like, we are bringing up these facts before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These things are what we're bringing up before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on the basis of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will act in turn and bring about a certain reality that reflects the facts that we're bringing up in front of him.
Not sleeping and things like that. So you don't have a sleepy ear and not to like eat all these.
Yes, it's very, very much connected. The simanim, we should have a separate conversation about the nature of the simanim, but it's very connected to what you're talking about. Yes, it's very connected to what we're talking about right now. The mazkir means that these are the things that are going to determine the nature of whatever is going to take place. In the same exact way that an author who writes a book, but he's not writing a book in that people can read it and get a good kick out of the story. He's writing the book that people are going to act out the book. This author, he realizes that the book is going to be real life. It's going to be real life. And the day that this is written is Yom HaZikaron. Yom HaZikaron is the day that book that is going to be acted out is written. I want to share with you a fascinating Midrash Rabbah from Midrash Rabbah on Rus. Okay? The context of the Midrash is that all of the different gestures that Boaz gave to Rus in their first interaction, okay, were all symbolic of the future of their descendants, meaning Malchus Beis David, right? The Davidic line comes from these two people. So the fact that he gives her, 5 sheaves of wheat, and the fact that she said, he feeds her and says, "Here, have some vinegar with your food. It'll make it taste better." All these tiny little gestures are all symbolic of things that are going on later in the history of the Davidic line. Okay, so it says the Midrash. Listen to this. So Boaz comes to Ruth and tells her, "Listen, you know, I know that you don't have so much sustenance in your house with Naomi, and that you're all destitute. And here, you should eat by me, and make sure that you take enough to eat." Va'itzbat la kolid, and she takes from the grain. Va'itzbat means to take something with the tips of your fingers. I don't know if there's an equivalent word like that in English, but that's what the word va'itzbat means. Exactly, like to take a pinch. So kolil zeir b'shtei etzbosav. She took with two fingers. Okay. Vatochal vatisba vatosar, and with that she ate, and she had left over, and she was satiated with whatever she took with her two fingers. So says the midrash. Excuse me. Says the midrash. Oh shebracha sharas b'me'ayal shel osa tzadekes. Oh shebracha shiruya be'etzbosav shel osa tzadik. Either there was blessing on the hands of Boaz, that gave her the food, or there was blessing in the innards, the intestines of Ruth that gave the food the ability to sustain her with that. Amar Yitzchak Bar Miryon, Baal Kosu Zalamedcha, Shim Adam Osa Mitzvah Yaasena Belev of Shalem. This is coming to tell you that if a person comes to does a mitzvah, he should do it with a whole heart. With a whole heart, right? Like, how do we see that from here? Because even this small little action that was done by Boaz, because he meant it, because he really wanted to give her, he really, you know, was moved to be able to help these people, so the small little gesture that he did was enough to satiate her, even though it was a very, very small amount of food. Says the Midrash, Ilu haya Reuven, it's going back, way, way back in Jewish history. Ilu haya Reuven, like Reuven, the son of Yaakov. Yodea shakarish baruchu machtiv alav, vayishma Reuven vayatzileu miadam, bekeitfo haya molicho etzal aviv. If Reuven knew that God was writing about him at that moment, that Reuven, right, Reuven says, don't kill him, throw him into a pit instead, because, you know, there's no reason why we should kill our own brother. And the Pasuk says that his intention was to come back later and save him. That was Reuven's intention, right? That's what it says in the Pasuk. So says the Midrash, if Reuven knew that God was watching this and writing down at that moment, he was writing down, and Reuven was really thinking that he was going to save him and bring him back to his father later, okay, what would Reuven have done? He would have ran back to the pit and carried Yosef home on his shoulders. He would have been so enthusiastic. But he didn't realize. He didn't realize the significance of what he was doing. It's true, this was the right thing to do, but he didn't do it b'lev avshalem. He knew he was doing a mitzvah, but it wasn't b'lev avshalem. So since it wasn't with full enthusiasm, he missed right? He missed the opportunity. V'ilu haya yodea Aaron. If Aaron according to Shakarish Baruch Hu machtiv alav, hinei hu yotze likrasecha. V'tufim b'mcholot haya yotze likrasecha. Right, Aaron comes to greet Moshe as he comes back to Mitzrayim after 60, 70 years of absence. Okay? So, it says that Aaron is coming to greet Moshe. That's what it says in the Pasuk. If Aaron knew at that moment that God was writing down, here, Aaron is coming to greet you, he would have brought a whole band and an orchestra to greet Moshe. V'ilu haya yodea Boaz, and if Boaz, bringing it back to our topic at hand, if Boaz knew, Shakarish Baruch Hu Machtiv Alav, Va'itzbat lo kalipa tochal v'tisba v'tosar, agolos mefutamos haya machtiv. He wouldn't have given her like small things of grain. He would have, you know, made her a whole barbecue. Okay? What is this saying, Rabosa? It's saying that the things that we do are not happening in isolation. They're being written down, machtiv. They're being written. They're being written somewhere. Where are they being written, Rabosa? Where are they being written? They're being written in the Sefer. They're being written in God's book. And again, not God's book that he needs because he needs to remember, because if he doesn't write it down, he's going to forget. No, he's writing it down in the book that's going to be acted out, the Sefer that's going to turn into a Sipur, the book that's going to turn into a story. That's where he's writing it. And if we knew that all of our actions are being written down in this book, we would have a completely different perspective on the actions that we take. The Sefer is becoming a Sipur. They're being written down in a Sefer that will become a Sipur. Yes.
Practically, you know anything about like what that it could actually mean? Because Tanakh, at the end of the day, you know, there's a Sefer Tanakh. You know, we all learn it today.
Yeah.
But Mistamo, that's not going
to
happen.
Ah, so Moshe Tzvi is getting out of the Midrash. Listen to the next line. Rav Cohen, Rabbi Yeshua, Disichnan, B'shem, Rav Levi. What do they say? L'sha'avar, at one point in time, Haya Adam Osa Mitzvah V'hanavi Kosva. When someone would do a mitzvah that was really significant and really had an impact on the world and on the Jewish people, who would write it down? A prophet would write it down. Va'achshav kisha adam osa mitzvah mikosva. Who's writing it down? There's no more Tanakh, as Moshe Tzvi said. So where's it being written? Who's writing it down? Says Midrash, Mikosva, Eliyo Hanaviu Melech HaMashiach Kosva. Va'akadosh Baruch Hu Chosem Al Yadeyem. And God takes a stamp and gives his stamp of approval on it. It's like today, whenever you bring anything into a bank or any official document, you need to sign and you need to bring a stamp. That's how it works, right? I run it on Mumtaz. So you need to sign and have a stamp. That's how it works. It's no good if you just sign. You have to have a stamp also. So Eliyo and Mashiach are writing down the mitzvos, and God brings his stamp. As it says in the pasuk in Malachi, Oz nidbru yirei Hashem ish el re'eu, v'yishma Hashem v'yichasev b'sefer. The pasuk that we quoted from the Perush Arayu. And God will hear and he will write it down. What does this mean, Rabosai? What does it mean that Eliyo and Mashiach are writing it and God puts the stamp? What does that mean? It means the following. That there was a period of time where the Kisvei HaKodesh were still being written. The seminal books of the Jewish people, the primary books of the Jewish people were still being written. And those stories, they had an impact for us. They were the foundation. They were the foundation of what we're supposed to look back to and draw inspiration from and see in which direction we're supposed to take to the next stage of Jewish history. But that period of time is over. There's no more Kisvei HaKodesh. Right? I mean, there is Kisvei HaKodesh, but they're not being written anymore. There's no more additions to the Kisvei HaKodesh. So now, when someone does an action that is of the level of significance of the things that were done in the Tanakh, who's writing them? Eliyo HaNavi and Melech HaMashiach. What does that mean, Eliyo HaNavi and Melech HaMashiach? It means the forces that will bring about the final redemption of the Jewish people, that's where it's being written. The mitzvos that we do today are being written in the book of Mashiach. Again, not the book that's there to remind you so that you won't forget. It's the book that's going to turn into a story. This book, the thing, is going to be turned into a story. And God sees this, what's being written down, and he says, I approve. And he puts a stamp of approval. And that is that chosam, that stamp of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the thing that turns it into a sipur. It turns it into a story, an actualized story. Not just a theoretical book. If we understood the significance of the actions that we take, that they're not happening in an ethereal vacuum. It's not like we do something and then we move on to the next thing and it's as if nothing happened. No. The things that we do are vayishma Hashem vayichasev. God hears and he's writing them. He's not in this immature way that, you know, someone's, you know, over your shoulder and watching you and, you know, keeping track of all your movements. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that the things that you do are there. They're in this book that's going to be played out, and they have an impact. They actually have an impact. And if Reuven knew that God was watching and seeing, oh, Reuven's going to be the one to save Yosef, and he's waiting with bated breath, so to speak, he would have done it with a little bit more enthusiasm. And if Boaz knew that God was watching and waiting for him to do this act of kindness for a destitute woman, he would have also done it with a little bit more enthusiasm. When we have this approach that the things that we're doing are being written down, they're being written down in the Sifron Shel Tzadikim, it gives you a completely different perspective. We don't understand that we're writing a program that will be played out. It will be played out. Yeah.
I think that in Shuvah, like, erases something from the book and then rewrites Shuvah over it.
Exactly. Nachon. Bidiuk. Bidiuk. That's what it is. Shuvah is going back and fixing the bugs in the code. That's what it is. The code is now faulty and it's telling the machine to do things that we don't want it to do. And what's Shuvah? We're going back and we're rewriting the code. We're saying, I don't want to play this program anymore. I don't want to play out this program. I want to play a different program. Yeah.
This program is writing
goals. Huh?
This program is writing goals.
It's not writing necessarily specific events that will happen, but it's giving the basis for the ability for that thing to be acted out. Meaning, who... The character of Eliyahu HaNavi, what does he represent? He represents the force that will bring about Yemos HaMashiach, as it says in the Navi and Malachi, right? Hinei HaNavi, right? I'm going to bring Eliyahu before the great and mortifying day, right? Lifnei Yom Bo HaGadol VaHanor. Eliyahu is the force that brings about Yemos HaMashiach. So when it says that Eliyahu is writing it down, what does that mean? What does that mean? It doesn't mean that there's an actual person writing down an actual book. Again, it's not what it means. It means that this is contributing to the playbook that will bring about Yemos HaMashiach. That's what it means. That's actually another good mashal, a playbook. A playbook is not a regular type of book. A playbook is something that you write in order to be able to act out. That's the whole purpose of the book. Yeah.
Two questions. Number one, so our actions, they're being written down as if they were done in the past. For example, I'll do something, and if it's significant, they'll be written down in the book as something that was done in the past. And as this kind of part two to that question, when Mashiach comes, will they have this book and be able to look back on the book as how Mashiach came about?
Well, again, I think that question is still stuck with the literal interpretation of what this book is. This book is not an actual book with actual words written down. It's the force and potentiality for something to take place. It's like the relationship between I'm just running with this mashal because I think it's the most accurate to understand the nature of what we're talking about. It's like if you could see the code, like you could do this. You can open up any right. They have now. You click Control U. It opens up in the sidebar the code for the thing. So if you open up, if you do Control U and see the code of any given page on the internet, the code looks nothing like what you're interacting with. It doesn't right. The code for Google Docs doesn't look like a Google Doc at all. Yeah, it's the potentiality for the Google Doc to open up in front of you. So that's the nature of what we're talking about. The actions that we take are the potentiality for other things to come into being. That's what it's saying. And Yom HaZikaron, Rosh Hashanah, i.e. Rosh Hashanah, is the day where that is happening in the most powerful fundamental level. And that's why we say in Tefillah, multiple times throughout Rosh Hashanah, Hayom Haras Olam. Today is the conception of the world. What does that mean, the conception? It means that this is the act that is bringing about the potentiality for everything else that will continue from that moment. From that moment, right? From the moment of conception, everything about the child is determined from the moment of conception. Correct? But it's all in potential. It's all in potential. It's going to unpack and actualize throughout the period of pregnancy. So too, what we decide on Rosh Hashanah, our avod on Rosh Hashanah, is the conception of the year that is going to bring about how the world plays itself out. But the point that I'm trying to get to over here is that Rosh Hashanah is the day that we have to decide what program we want to play out. What is the story that we want to play out? That is the essential question of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, go ahead.
Sounds like every action.
A lot of questions here. Yeah.
From the beginning of the year. It's not like every action you do from the beginning of the year is being written down in the book. First of all, we don't know which book you're going to be part of, either Tzadikim or Rishayim or the middle. So, like, where is it? Like, it's not being physically written down, but like, where are you going to be put initially as like the default one, I guess? And if it's from the beginning of the year, then how much effect does really Rosh Hashanah have if all your actions lead up to that also?
Well, we can go back and make changes. It's possible to go back and make changes. But like the mashal that I heard from Moshe Shapiro a number of years ago, that just like when a child is born, just like when a child is conceived, the full makeup of the child is determined at that moment, right? And then the child is born with all the different features that he or she has, okay? And let's say that there are, God forbid, issues with the child when it's born. Is it possible to correct those issues? Maybe, could be, right? Could be that intervention afterwards could correct problems that, God forbid, the child has once it's born. But you want to avoid that. You don't want to do that. You don't want to, like, have a bad pregnancy, God forbid, and then have to go correct problems with the child once it's born. You want the conception to be good, to be as good as it possibly can be, and then the child will come out whole and perfect to the extent that it could be. You don't want to have to go back and make corrections after it's already been done. Right? You want to start off good. That's the whole point. The whole point is that you want the conception to be as perfect as possible. Because if the conception is good, then everything in potentiality is as good as it possibly can be, and then that will unpack and actualize into something whole and sustainable. Does that kind of answer what you were? Yeah. As much as it can. Anyway, the last idea that I'd like to leave everyone off with is the following. I know that this is heavy. I know that this is heavy, but it's worth thinking about. Chazal say in the Sifra in Parshas Bechukosai. In the end of the Klolos of Mishnah of Parshas Bechukosai, so there is a nechama, meaning it says that despite the fact that you'll be thrown into exile and defeated by your enemies and things will be really bad, but don't worry. At the end, Zocharti Esbrisi Yaakov, Vav Esbrisi Yitzchak, Vav Esbrisi Avraham Eskor, Vaharetz Eskor. I will remember the covenant that I made with Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avraham, and I'll remember the land. And I will, and through that merit, I will come and save all of you. So ask the Midrash the following: Lama lo muzkar zechira beYitzchak. The pasuk says, "Af v'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, ve'af es brisi Yitzchak, and also the covenant of Yitzchak." Avraham as kor, and I will also remember the bris of Avraham. But it skips the word zachor by Yitzchak. It says zachor by Yaakov, and it says zachor by Avraham, and not zachor by Yitzchak. So it says the midrash the following, right? Ki efro shel Yitzchak savur umunach lefonai tamid, because the ashes of Yitzchak are before me all the time. Meaning, it doesn't need a zachira. Do you understand what's being said, Rabosai? Zechira are the... He's shaking his head. The element of zechira is, as we said, as we've been saying this entire time, zechira means on what basis are we going to act? On what basis are we going to act? And we choose, through our actions and through our tefillos, we determine on what basis we're going to act and on what basis God is going to act. That's the zechira. That's the whole avoda of zechira. That's the whole avoda of Yom HaZikaron. But there is a zechira that's so fundamental that Kaviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need to be reminded, because he's always acting on the basis of that fact. What's the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always acting on the basis of all the time? We don't even need to remind him. And that's the Akedah. The Akedah is the fundamental fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always acting on the basis of. Because it is such a foundational merit of the Jewish people, it doesn't even require a zechira. And this gives you a little bit of insight as to why this is such an important theme on Rosh Hashanah. Constantly remembering the Akedah of Yitzchak. Right, the fact that the shofar itself alludes to the Akedah of Yitzchak, as we know. But this is what it is. There is a foundation from which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is acting all the time. It doesn't even require a zechira. And we, to the extent that we can, try to orient ourselves to that. You say, yes, it's true. There is this foundational merit of the avos that is there, that is before HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. And we are trying to orient ourselves to that fact, right? That the Jewish people sprung from this act, from this selfless act of a father and son that were willing to give up everything in order to. Right? I remember hearing. I've for sure told this story over here in other contexts, but I'll tell it over again. I remember when Rav Lau came to Merkaz Arav to speak to the families of the boys that were killed in the terrorist attack. This is 14 years ago already. He said, why is it that the Akedah is called the Nisayon of Avraham and not the Nisayon of Yitzchak? Hare Yitzchak was an adult, right? He was an adult at the time, so he clearly went along with it. He went along with it willingly. So why isn't it not called the Nisayon of Yitzchak? He could have run away if he wanted to. He could have just said, you know, I'm not doing this. I don't really want to be brought as a sacrifice today. So why is this not, you would think it would be more the Nisayon of Yitzchak. So says Rav Lau, an incredible thing. It says, the Nisayon of Yitzchak, it's true, there was a Nisayon of Yitzchak, for sure. But the Nisayon of Yitzchak was the Nisayon of a moment. Just one moment. The Nisayon of Avraham was a Nisayon of a lifetime. Of an entire lifetime. Because he, through that act, was going to bring himself to a lifetime, first of all, without his son. First of all, without his son, and also having to live with the knowledge that he wouldn't have that continuity that he had been building on for all these decades. He was hoping that he would have this continuity to continue this project that he had started almost 100 years ago, like 50, 60 years ago at that point. He had started this great project that he knew that Yitzchak was the continuity of that. And he would have to live without... Basically, the Akedah is giving up everything. It's just giving up everything. And achieving that nothingness before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being completely willing to give up everything, this is the foundational merit of the Jewish people. And it doesn't even require a zechira. It doesn't even require a zechira. Right? But ha-gufa rabosai, in a way, it's like it's right. It's this point that we want to hone in on over here. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes with his zechira, with what he already remembers, and then we have to tell him what we're remembering. God comes with his zechira and says, "I remember. I relate to you. My zechira in regards to you is the Akedah of Yitzchak. That's my zechira. I'm operating with you on the basis of the Akedah of Yitzchak. What are you operating on the basis of? How are you treating me? When you interact with me, what's your zechira?" And that's the question that we ask on Yom HaZikaron. And that's the day, this is the avoda of Yom HaZikaron. The avoda of Yom HaZikaron is to decide what is the zechira in which we will base everything. And to remember, the actions that we do, and the decisions that we make, and the commitments that we make, they do not happen in a vacuum. Vayishma Hashem vayikasev b'sefer. Extra credit question, Moshe Tzvi. Should I include you or should I not include you? Because you might know. Where does this pasuk that we've already quoted a few times from the book of Malachi? Vayishma Hashem vayikasev b'sefer. Where did Chazal quote that pasuk? Where did Chazal quote that in the Mishnah? In Maseches Avos. Yeah, the Maseches Avos says, if 10 people sit and study Torah together, Shechina Shruya Beinam. If there are ten people sitting and studying Torah, the divine presence is with them. Okay? And how do we know that even two people that sit and study Torah together, they're also the divine presence is also standing between them? As it says in Sefer Malachi, Vayishma Hashem Vayikasev B'Sefer, that God will, the pasuk that precedes that is Chaverim Makshivim, that God will see these two friends that are listening to each other, meaning these two guys that just are learning B'Chavrusa, not a whole Beis HaMedrash, just two guys that are learning B'Chavrusa. God will see that, Vayishma Vayikasev B'Sefer. He will hear and he will write it in his book. The things that we do are being written in a book. And again, we think that the book is going on the past, that you won't forget the past. No, the book is determining the future. It's not a zikaron to remember the past, it's a zikaron to determine the future. That's the zikaron. The zikaron to determine the future. Bezrat Hashem, approaching Rosh Hashanah with this mindset is the key. It's the key. And this is the meaning of the Yushalmi in Rosh Hashanah. I'm sorry, we're not going to open up inside because we've already dragged on for quite a while. And the Yushalmi Rosh Hashanah says the following, right? Minog Shaba Olam, Adam Ba Ladino. It's normal that a person who has a judgment, okay? He knows that he has a judgment. He has to come in front of a judge, right? Lovesh Shcharim, Misatef B'Shcharim. He wears black and he wraps himself in black and he's in a state of mourning. He's in a state of existential fear. The Yisrael Einam King, but the Jewish people are not like that. Elalovshim levanim, umisatvim levanim. They down themselves in white and they wrap themselves in white. Umistaprim, and it says that they cut their hair. It says it right, yeah. The Yodim shahakarish baruchu osalehem nisan, and they are confident that God will perform miracles for them. How could you be so confident that God is going to perform miracles for you? But again, Rabosa, this goes back to the point that we're making before. There is a regular judgment. This is the whole point of the Yerushalmi. Benoach Shaba Olam, normal judgments. What's the nature of a judgment? The nature is that you're going before someone who's going to make a decision, and based on and that decision is going to determine the rest of your life. It's an external decision. This person has control over you, so it's a little nerve-wracking. You don't know what the person's going to do. Is he gonna give you good judgment, a bad judgment? We don't know. So it's a little nerve-wracking. But Rosh Hashanah isn't like that. Rosh Hashanah is the opposite. It's the opposite of that. God is saying, look, here's the book. This book is going to determine what's going to happen. You could write whatever you want in this book. Anything you want, you could write. That's a cause for celebration. That's great. That's wonderful. What bigger Yom Tov could be than that if God is handing you the book that's going to determine what's going to be and you could write whatever you want in the book? That's the biggest Yom Tov that there is. Right? Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah. It's the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. And just to bring this back, because I remember that we opened up with the Klala situation. Right? Just mamash b'kitzur nimrats, okay? What is the idea that there are klolos attached to the giving of the Torah? There are klolos attached to this package deal. I will say, to the extent that something has complexity, to that extent, there's also the potential for thriving, but there's also the potential for things to go wrong. So for example, like an amoeba, you know, like a small little, you know, single-celled whatever, not much can go... What? A unicellular, right? Not much can go wrong there. Not much can go wrong, because relatively speaking, it's not complicated. Yes, even one cell is pretty complicated. But because it's, like, Basakha Kola is one cell, not much can go wrong. What can go wrong, right? When you get complicated, you have, oh, now you have multicellular organisms, and you have more things can go wrong, right? Right? You have a rupture in the membrane, right? Right. This cell goes bad, and that causes a chain reaction to all the other cells. Things can go wrong, right? You get into animals get sick. Animals get really sick, right? Horrible diseases. You get into human beings, oh my gosh, you put the brain on the, right, between the ears of this animal, oh my gosh, they can make all types of things go wrong. To the extent that there's more complexity, there's more potential for thriving, but there's also more potential for things to go wrong. And the Torah is telling us that the potential, that coming with the potential for thriving, for bracha, is there's also, comes with that, the potential for klala. And this goes hand in hand, right? It goes hand in hand, because to the extent that we want to be in the top level of performance, the top level of functioning, it requires more discipline. It requires more rigidity. And if you step out of that rigidity, then things can go very wrong. This is the nature of the klalos. This is the nature of the klalos. And the reading of the klalos before Rosh Hashanah is first of all reminding us of this reality, that there are klalos attached to these brachos, but also at the same time, tichla shana v'kila losea. Why? It's making an assertion. It's making a statement. It's making a personal mission statement at the individual and collective level. You're saying, I'm leaving the klalos behind. I'm choosing to not go with the... I understand that the klalos are attached because it's inextricably bound to the package of brachos. I understand that. But I'm choosing to go with the bracha. I'm choosing to go with the bracha. Because the sefer was put in front of me, the sefer is going to determine what's going to happen is put in front of me, and I'm choosing to write this. I'm choosing to write the brachos. I'm not choosing to write the klalos. Tich l'shana v'kila l'seah, that the klalos can stay behind. The year that I'm entering now is going to be a bracha year, because you could decide, and that's how a person can go in to Rosh Hashanah Bezrat Hashem with the mindset of a yom tov, and not the mindset of, God forbid, of trepidation and being petrified and being overly concerned. Mizrat Hashem.